Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's right, 906 on KMOX. Welcome, hour two. George Sells in, holding down the fort here at KMOX. What can I call this? Mike Anderson holding down the controls over here. Can I call this the George Sells Show? Can I name it that, even though I'm just filling in? We'll have to check on that. George Sells Show, Volume 1, Episode 1. Will there be an Episode 2? Well, that will depend largely on whether or not the boss likes Episode 1. Feel free to chime in as we go along tonight. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. You can also hit me up on Twitter, at George Sells. Now, if you're going the social media route, drop in your favorite Super Bowl snack. Link a recipe if you want. Coming up later on in the hour, we're going to be talking about the one thing in this game Sunday that people who hate Stan Kroenke and despise the New England Patriots can still enjoy about the Super Bowl: eating. We'll be talking Super Bowl food with one of the most prolific and knowledgeable foodies in the STL. And speaking of the Super Bowl, there, I said it, Super Bowl. Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. Is anyone out there as fed up as I am with all of these commercials trying to duck and dodge their way around the phrase Super Bowl? Come watch the big game. It'll be super, nudge, nudge. The NFL owns the copyright, and apparently they've gotten very aggressive in recent years, making sure no one is selling anything using those two magic words without the NFL getting its cut. Well, to the NFL, I say this: get over yourself. You've created something wonderful, a national holiday of sorts, and people want to talk about it. Maybe even do things with their businesses that revolve around it a little bit. Take the compliment and move on. If Joe Schmo's Furniture in Keokuk, Iowa, wants to sell a couch for you to sit on during the Super Bowl, can you just let that nickel pass by? There are about 2 billion others coming your way. And whatever you perceive as loss, you can probably save by not paying lawyers to monitor every local commercial in every market in the United States. As usual, the NFL is tone deaf and a little bit stupid. So Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. I'm going to say it as often as I can throughout the next hour. And for the folks skipping the game altogether, maybe a movie or three is in your plans. If you want to brush up on the Oscar favorites, there probably hasn't been a tougher year in some time. Usually these pre-award shows that you see all over the place, Golden Globes, SAG Awards and such, will tell you something about what to look for come Oscar night, but not this year. Every one of them has picked something different for Best Picture. This is another spot where we're going to want to hear from you. Call or tweet. Let us know what your favorites are. Harry Hamm is going to be joining us as we look through all of it. Black Panther, overrated comic book, film, or contender? Spike Lee, well-known but underrated? Roma, masterpiece, or Insomnia Aid? Bohemian Rhapsody, brilliant biopic, or missing the mark? People are getting fired up over their favorites. Harry Hamm and I will be talking about ours. Now, it has been a very cold day. I don't think we've forgotten about that. Does anyone start their day, or did anyone start their day the way I did? It's 5 a.m. and there's that unsettling sound of a cell phone on vibrate, crawling across the bedside table. It's amazing what goes through your head when the phone rings at that hour. My dad lives out of town. Is he okay? Another loved one recently had a health issue. Please don't let it be that. And if it's one of those recordings offering to pay off my college loans calling at 5 a.m., I'm going to reach through the phone and kill someone. Nope, none of the above. It was the local school district. Schools closed. Day two. Yesterday, it was simply the cold. Today, it was the roads after an inch of snow fell in temperatures that make those chemicals they use on the roads pretty much useless. I can't say I blame them for closing the schools, but could we not have made the decision last night when I was awake? I knew the polar vortex was going to mess with me in the daytime. I did not know it was coming for me in my sleep. Please bring on that warm-up. I cannot wait till 60 degrees on Sunday. We're back in a moment on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
When news breaks out, KMOX breaks in. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. Depend on it.
And welcome back to KMOX. I am George Sells, joined now by Kat Neville from Feast Magazine and also PBS's Tastemakers. And we got to talk about Super Bowl food with the Super Bowl coming up. Now, there is something that I saw the other day. My favorite Super Bowl snack, I think, in St. Louis comes from Pretzel Boys over on Manchester. It is the Cronky Sucks Super Bowl pretzel.
I saw that on Facebook, actually. And I would have to agree with you. I mean, for me personally, the whole point of a Super Bowl party is the food. I mean, the food and the ads. So I think that we're on the right track.
Absolutely. And the other thing that's out there that I think is a little bit nuts, we're going to get into serious food here in a moment, but one thing that's out there that is a little bit crazy is this Google algorithm that is telling us what the most popular Super Bowl snack in every state is. And according to this, here in Missouri, broccoli cheese soup is the most popular Super Bowl snack.
I don't know where they got that, because broccoli cheese soup isn't even the most popular soup in Missouri, I would argue. I mean, maybe they got us mixed up with Wisconsin.
I can't figure it out. I personally, I would say buffalo chicken dip, just because that is the one thing that I end up making every year on the instructions of my wife or our, whatever Super Bowl party we go
sure.
to.
Sure. You and probably half of America.
Yeah, and then some of the other states, you know, cupcakes in Louisiana, maybe drowning their sorrows in sugar because the Saints should be in the Super Bowl. And taco salad in Kentucky?
I would tell Google to go back to the algorithm drawing board.
I think we have some drug use in algorithm room at Google. Well, tell me this. What is on your list? What is on your table for a Super Bowl party this year?
So the thing about the Super Bowl party is that you have a big group of people, you're drinking beer, you're hanging out, you probably have kids. It's a very diverse group, and you are going to be there for hours. And so you want something that is easy, that's crowd pleasing, and something that can hold for a good amount of time and not like die on the table, essentially.
You don't want a sculpture by the third quarter.
Yes. So you want something that you can hold in a crock pot or is meant to be served room temp. So a couple of really easy ideas. One would be to make whatever signature chili recipe you have and make like a chili bar. So you can go and do like chili dogs. You can do like mac and cheese and hold it and do a chili mac. And that way you have something that's hot that everybody really loves. And if you lay out all of the different, you know, things like chopped jalapenos, chopped raw onions. You can go to Ballyard's in Maplewood and get some really amazing sausages. So that's a fun way to do something that is crowd pleasing and you can kind of like mix everything up. And another idea that would be, especially here in Missouri, where pork is always on the menu, pulled pork is ridiculously easy to make. You don't have to be a barbecue wizard to make pulled pork. All you need is a pork shoulder. You put a rub on it. You put it in a 325 degree oven, so a low oven, and you let it roast for 3 to 4 hours, depending on how big it is. Then kind of tent it, let it rest, and then pull it. It's going to be the most tender and perfect, and you cannot imagine, I mean, how easy that is. You just take the meat, shove it in the oven, let it sit there for a few hours and pull it out, and then you have perfect pulled pork. And you can turn that into sliders, you can turn that into nachos, you can turn that into anything. And again, you can have that meat be the centerpiece, hold it in a crock pot so that it's warm, and then have all of these different kind of like things that you can pile it on top of.
I've even cooked the pulled pork in a crock pot before. There's an option with that too.
Absolutely. And if you have the Instant Pot, then everything is even easier because it makes it so much more quick.
Right. Then there's the issue, some of these will work over this way, but when you're going to the party, you've got to bring something.
Yes.
Because it's like, do you bring the crock pot and try to plug it in, or do you make sandwiches? I never know what to do when I get into that boat.
Well, I would first ask the host what's missing. But then again, you probably want to bring something that is going to be good at room temp. And so this is when the dips and the chips and all those types of things can come in. And, you know, rather than just going to the grocery store and picking up a pre-cut, you know, package of of you know, of broccoli and cauliflower. You know, there are other fun ways to go in, like you could do charcuterie and cheeses, and you definitely could do veggies, but maybe roast the veggies and then do like a whipped gorgonzola dip or something that kind of amps it up a little bit, just to kind of make it fun, but it still is, has to be easy, and it has to be something that can sit around for a while without just kind of, you know, falling apart.
At least we'll have some decent weather this weekend, so we don't have to worry about it freezing when you walk to
the car. It's bizarre how warm it's going to be. I mean, it's going to be in the 60s.
Crazy. Have you, what about you? Have you ever done anything like crazy? I don't know. What's I guess if I ever came to your house for a meal, I would be expecting something just to blow my mind because of what you do for a living. Is that extra pressure for you, by the way?
No. Well, I love having people over, and I typically do things that are more in the simple realm because, I mean, I mean, unless it's something where I'm having a friend over and we're like, let's cook out of this cookbook, or let's do a themed dinner or something where we're kind of in cahoots. If I'm having people over for dinner, I typically do things that are a little bit more on the simple side, because if you are, you know, a stressed out host, or if you're running around, then it's no fun for anybody who's coming over for dinner. But I mean, I'm almost always just playing around in the kitchen and coming up with something different. So I don't know.
So you think toasted Rav should have been on this Google list for Missouri, or were they?
Well, for St. Louis, I mean, everybody in Missouri, every city in St. Louis has its own thing. So like Springfield has cashew chicken, and obviously Kansas City has barbecue. And obviously, you know, St. Louis has T-Ravs. T-Ravs, though, won't do terribly well on like a Super Bowl buffet, because you want them nice and hot and crispy. So that's why I would go more in the realm of something like a pulled pork or like a chili. You can do, you know, the cheese, the cheddar broccoli soup, if that's what you want. But I would probably go more kind of more meaty and spicy and fun.
Okay, I'm going to spring a theme on you here a little
bit.
So you could always do like the theme of the two cities involved in the Super Bowl. I know you've done your show up in New England before.
Yes.
So what would a good New England snack be? And we're not even going to talk about the gluten-free pretzels on the Google list.
Yeah, Google got that wrong. I mean, in the Northeast, you have a lot of Italian food, and you have obviously a lot of seafood. And so, I mean, I would say, obviously, you could do a very traditional, like, lobster roll. You could do a crab boil. I would kind of go in that direction, and rather than going in the direction of the Italian food, I would probably go more with the traditional, you know, New England seafood for sure.
And what about L.A.?
Oh my gosh. Well, LA is very trendy. I mean, obviously you have an amazing Mexican food scene there, and there's so much kind of like meshing together of all of the different culinary, you know, worlds that exist in Los Angeles. And so you could do things like Korean tacos and, you know, like kind of really fun stuff like that. I mean, in LA, you can get just about anything, but I would probably go more in that direction.
So we can theme that out. And there's always the Kroenke Sucks pretzel.
Yeah. That's what I would pick.
I think so too. It's interesting. I'm wondering if a lot of people in St. Louis are going to skip it this year.
Well, I mean, I probably will not skip it just because it's fun and it's this American ritual. It's an American holiday. But I mean, who wants to watch the Rams? I mean, I'm sure there are still a few holdouts that are like, you know, the Rams are still connected to St. Louis, but I just, you know.
And the Patriots.
I used to live in Massachusetts, so I don't have the hating on the Patriots like a lot of people do. But yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate matchup. I was really hoping that the Chiefs were going to make it.
Yeah, a lot of people in this town see this as like picking between Hitler and Stalin.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of not good. And so, you know, if you choose to like boycott the Super Bowl and do something else, you can still have a great dinner with your friends. Just have something else on the TV.
I was going to say, you could probably go to the best restaurant in town and get an easy table.
Probably.
Well, Kat Neville, thank you so much for being with us on KMOX. We're figuring out the food for the Super Bowl, folks. You got a few days left. And if you have your favorite recipe that you want to get out there for folks, tweet me at George Sells. I will retweet your recipes so everybody can get out there and find their favorites at the house, their favorites at home, and maybe we can come up with some good ideas for this Sunday to make it a little different this year, since the game is going to be kind of a downer. Thanks, Kat.
Thank you so much.
And I'm hungry after just all that conversation. I'm starving now. I need food. Desperately need food. I'm going to go raid the refrigerator here during this break. And coming up after the break, we're going to take a look at the best picture conversation
And it's a heck of a conversation because nobody can make up their mind on which movie should win. What do you think? We're going to hear from Harry Hamm, and we'll have a few ideas from me as well coming up next on KMOX.
Let's go Blues!
Hey folks, Chris Kerber with you here, and the St. Louis Blues head into their All-Star break and bye week. They've got some time off. They'll return to action on February 2nd. That's a Saturday night in Columbus. They'll be on the road to take on the Blue Jackets with a 5:30 pregame show and a 6 o'clock faceoff from Nationwide Arena right here on your home for St. Louis Blues hockey, KMOX.
Let's go Blues!
No one will play us on the radio.
We need to get experimental.
Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Do it again. One more.
How many more Galileos do you want?
Roger, there's only room in this band for one hysterical queen.
Bohemian Rhapsody. Best Picture, one of the Best Picture winners in the Golden Globes, one of the nominees for Best Picture in the Oscars. But who will win? Hard to tell because usually we have these nice barometers coming into the Oscar season, all these different award shows. They usually kind of give you an idea where to look, but this year they can't make up their mind. So we're going to one of the experts, Harry Hamm, joining us. Critic extraordinaire. Harry, how are you doing tonight? Welcome to KMOX.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, George.
So what have your thoughts been as you've been watching all of these pre-Oscar award ceremonies run through and every one of them seemingly reaching a different conclusion?
Yeah, you got that right. And I'll tell you something. It's a little bit, since the nomination just came out, it's a little bit in advance to the standpoint of we're going to get down to some guessing. But, you know, I've always had some complaints about the Oscars. And, you know, this is the 91st year for the Oscars. And as they get older, they not only get more difficult to predict, but they also get strange. Now, first of all, when I say strange, I've always, and it seems to get worse every year, I always see so many obvious oversights that it's just pathetic. For instance, I don't know if you heard about the documentary about Mr. Rogers called Won't You Be My Neighbor?
I saw it, and it was fantastic. I loved it. My wife loved it, and we're of that age to have grown up with Mr. Rogers. But what was interesting to me about that was the fact that my 13-year-old son and 9-year-old daughter were completely captured by it. They couldn't stop watching. They loved it.
And guess what? It made $25 million, approximately. Excuse me. A little bit of a cough. Actually, a lot of a cough. And it was not, it made $25 million, which is for documentaries, is a ton of money domestically. And it was not nominated in the best documentary category.
And why do you think that was? Because that does not make a lick of sense to me as far as not only because it was popular, but as a guy who has worked in the news business and has done some documentary work over the years, like shorter form, I can't fathom how that wasn't one of the 5 or 6 best documentaries out there. I mean, RBG was fantastic. It got a nomination. I really enjoyed that one.
Right.
Free Solo was a wild ride, certainly. I didn't see all of the other nominees, but I find it very difficult to believe that there was no room for that in a best documentary category.
Well, you know, a lot of people have said for many years, and it seems to get worse as time goes on, George, that nominations and wins can almost be bought. For example, I heard several years ago about this, and I kind of suspected it, that a lot of times a producer of a film, let's say it's up for Best Picture, he'll want an actor, a producer, a director to vote for it, and he'll make a deal with them. Some people say it's financial. Some people say if it's an actor, he guarantees them a role in a film that they want. But the deal is, you bring your ballot to his office, show it to him how it's marked, then seal it, put a stamp on it, and mail it from there. And then he'll give you whatever he's promised to give you for that vote. And that evidently, that type of thing has been going on not only for a long time in Hollywood, but seems deal-making, trades, favors seem to be one of the reasons it's conjectured. The conjecture is that this is how some of these slights and some of these films that get nominated have everybody scratching their head. Now, let's just take the two films that are in the best film category and are purported the two strongest favorites. One is a film called Roma. Now, Roma has no theatrical release in North America.
Netflix.
It's a Netflix film. Mm-hmm. It's in Spanish with English subtitles. It's in black and white. I've watched it twice. I can't understand it. I mean, I understand it. It's a story of a poor family, and she's a domestic, and she has an affair, and she gets pregnant with her boyfriend who leaves her and so forth. A good movie, a very good movie, a very good script. But to say that that's an Academy Award Best Picture, my first question is, why isn't it in the Best Foreign Language category?
That makes the most sense to me also. That was the one I've seen all the Best Picture nominees. I actually have a vote in the Producers Guild Awards. And right. I've seen all the nominees. And that was probably the one that, if I had to rank them 1 through 8, that's the one I would put as number 8. I mean, it was beautifully shot. It was aesthetically pleasing. But the storyline was slow. It was kind of boring. There was nothing particularly groundbreaking about it either. I mean, I understand that you sometimes will get a film that you have to have an appreciation for a slower pace to really enjoy. And I'm fine with that. Right. Roma, though, I just didn't get it. And I don't know if this was voters trying to get past the whole concept that Netflix is being blackballed by the Oscars or whatever that might be. But I didn't get it that much either. And I've heard some people who loved it. Obviously, the Screen Actors Guild folks loved it because they voted it as Best Picture. And good for them. I feel pretty good about the fact that the one I was voting in put Green Book as Best Picture. And for my money, that was at least in the conversation in the top 2 or 3.
And, one of the movies I was very impressed with that I don't think gets its due is Vice. You know, it was nominated for Best Picture, but it's kind of a polarizing film because if you're a conservative voter, you'll think it's a hatchet job on Dick Cheney. If you're a liberal, you'll think it's the truth. If you're an independent, I'm kind of an independent voter. I thought it was a pretty honest movie about him, the kind of person he was, both good and bad, and the kind of politician he was, and his motivations. And but it's like, it's so polarizing that it'll probably lose simply because it get as many votes against it as it will, so to speak, for it. And there's a movie that wasn't nominated that I think was a cardinal sin. And it was called If Beale Street Could Talk.
That was fantastic. I saw that one as well. And how Roma gets nominated and then that one doesn't is one of the great questions in life as far as movies go, I think.
Yeah, and you're starting to see why each year I get a little bit more jaundiced about this voting. Emily Blunt, I think, could have easily been a nominee for Mary Poppins. Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born as a director. Peter Farrelly for The Green Book.
What's up with Star Is Born, by the way? That movie, it did everything right, so it seems. It was a fantastic movie, and yet it can't seem to get arrested when it comes to the final vote in these various award shows. Is it uncool to vote for the box office mega hit?
No, it's kind of uncool to vote for a redo. In other words, this was a big hit many years ago, and now it's a redo. And you might think, well, Streisand's great. Bradley Cooper did a great job as a director. But this movie's already gotten its due, so it can't be any better now. I think, frankly, that's part of the reason. When you go back to Roma and you speak about Netflix, maybe there's an agenda there because, companies like Netflix are spending Hollywood money on making films. So maybe Hollywood sees a profitability angle into the distribution of films by people like Netflix that saves them some money as a business. I don't know what the agenda is. I'm not sure anybody really does, but the way everything is skewed this year, you can't help but believe that, first of all, it's always an entertaining TV show.
Right.
Next to the Super Bowl, it always gets great ratings across the world, really. The problem is they can never finish it on time. It's always 8 to 12 minutes too long. And a lot of people, you know, think it should just be a two-hour show like the Golden Globes.
Absolutely. The Golden Globes moves along a little bit faster. They keep it at a quicker clip. And so do
the Tony Awards. Yeah. You would think, what I've always thought, George, is that Hollywood knows how to make movies, but they don't know how to necessarily make a good TV show.
There's no question about that. I want to get to another of the big discussion points and controversies, and I don't know if controversy is the word, but arguments anyway. Black Panther. Good movie. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I like the comic book movies, at least some of them. And it looks strange in the best picture category to me. Yeah. And that's nothing on the movie itself. It may be more the genre, and maybe that's just me not being used to seeing the Marvel universe in that company. What were your thoughts when you saw that?
Well, you have to excuse me.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine.
I'm getting over a bad cough here, and there's no mute button on the phone.
and we can't thank you enough for fighting your way through that cough to talk to us tonight. Here I am.
You said the magic word a moment ago, Marvel. Marvel Studios, their pictures make big money. So Hollywood wants to encourage them. Hollywood wants to see them be successful, because if they're successful, Hollywood is successful. The exhibitors are successful, and the distributors are successful. And there's nothing hotter in Hollywood than a big-budget film, live action or animated or digital or a combination of all three, that comes from Marvel Studios. So that didn't surprise me at all.
I've heard some people say that the whole Oscars So White controversy over the last couple of years may have had a hand in it. I don't know that I buy that. But what were your thoughts when you've heard that argument made?
I kind of agree with it.
Okay.
I do. And I think that they've slighted ethnic groups over the years.
Well, there's no question about that. There's no doubt about that at all. I wonder if they were looking to find an African American director. If they were looking to find a film that was just lights out, Black Klansman was fantastic. Spike Lee, a long time coming as a Best Director nominee. I mean, to think about all these years and the man's never had an Oscar nomination, all the great movies he's done. And
that's absolutely right. So, and I've interviewed him, and believe me, he's aware of that. And he'll talk about it quite stridently, too. And you have to give him credit, because I think he's right. So maybe this year, when you have a Mexican movie, you have films like Black Klansman and Black Panther and all that, maybe in the nominations, folks are saying, you know, the voters or the people that are voting at the end, and then eventually those who vote in the categories, they're all saying, well, we don't want to alienate anybody, so we're going to have to do our nominations and do our awards in a way that maybe will be the most accepted by the moviegoers. But on the other side of the coin, how many people do you and I know that are just regular moviegoers, okay? They don't have any, they're not tangent to broadcasting or film or TV. How many are going to see Roma? How many are going to see The Favorite? I mean, The Favorite is what we used to call a specialty film.
Right.
You know, it shows at the art houses that they used to call it. And in St. Louis now, you've got the Plaza Frontenac and you've got the Tivoli. And occasionally, you know, Marcus Theaters bought out Wehrenberg Theaters here a couple, 3 years ago, and they're doing a fantastic job of upgrading the movie-going experience here. And occasionally, because they have so many screens in St. Louis, pretty much own exhibition in St. Louis, they will devote a screen to a film like The Favorite. But it's still not what you would call, it's a period piece and a beautifully done historic period piece, and I think it deserves to be nominated. But to say that it's got a chance to win, I don't know. I think the voting this year is going to be as controversial as the nominations.
Tell me this back to Spike. Does he have a shot at Best Director?
Yes, and let me say this. Spike Lee is a very powerful director. He's a very powerful guy in Hollywood. And he's been letting it be known for many years now. And he told me this in a sit-down, face-to-face interview for about 30 minutes. KMOX. He's just getting sick and tired of being ignored. I think he's got a 50-50 chance to win this year, which is probably the best that he's had in a long time.
Well, Harry Hamm, KMOX critic extraordinaire with us. Are you able to hang around with us through the cough for another segment, Harry?
Absolutely. Be happy to.
Okay, so when we come back, I'm going to ask Harry what his best picture is. We haven't heard that one yet, so let's find out coming up after the break. It's 9:42 on KMOX.
News at the top and bottom of the hour, mornings and afternoons, KMOX.
And 9:46 on the dot here on KMOX, talking movies with Harry Hamm, critic extraordinaire, among other many talents. And we'd like to hear from you as well. Give us a call, 314-436-7900. 800-925-1120, the toll-free version of the number. Talking about the Best Picture nominees and everything else to do with the Oscars. They're coming up pretty soon. Some St. Louisans are going to probably pull out the movies instead of watching the Super Bowl on Sunday with the way that game is looking and the teams involved. But Harry, we've been talking about favorites here. What was your favorite for the Best Picture? What's your favorite movie of these?
Well, you know, we used to be you can only have five, and now there seems to be no limit. The two films that I liked the best were The Green Book and Vice. But if I were a voter, I would vote for Green Book. I thought it had the two male leads were extraordinary. The story was so beautifully told. It was a period piece that was so honest and direct that I found myself very engrossed in the story. And in point of fact, I've seen it twice, and I think Viggo Mortensen might win because I've never seen a... He is such a gifted and adaptable actor. He can do so much that if I were voting at the Oscars, I would vote for The Green Book.
Yeah, I have been torn. When I had that ballot in my hand for the Producers Guild Awards, I was torn between Green Book and Bohemian Rhapsody. I really enjoyed Bohemian Rhapsody. I thought it was a fantastic movie, a very entertaining movie, despite variety of controversies around it as far as whether or not it belonged in that class and the surprise of it winning in the Golden Globes. Ended up picking Green Book for a lot of the reasons you're talking about. Again, just it was a compelling story. It was one of those that really just made you feel something when you walked out of it or when you finished watching it.
And it's the kind of movie you want to talk, you know, it's the kind of movie that you want to talk to your friends about. If you've gone, you know, with your wife or your husband or friends or whatever, it's the kind of movie that you sit down and have a glass of milk after the movie and you discuss it. And that's one of the communal aspect of going to the movies is something I still enjoy a lot. And Green Book was one of those films that would get you talking. You know, I made a prediction before the nominations came out. If anybody else made this prediction, I certainly searched for it and couldn't find it. But I predicted that Melissa McCarthy would be nominated for Best Actress for the movie Can You Ever Forgive Me? And she was. And everybody that I told said, I never heard of that movie. What's it about? You know, well, it's based on a true story of a female author who has had great success and then kind of goes in the dumper with her career. So she starts forging other people's writings and stuff to bring her career back. And Melissa McCarthy is not only a gifted comedian, she's just a gifted actress. So I wanted to throw in the fact that I predicted over a month ago that she would be nominated for Best Actress. And everybody said, what? But it looks like this year in that category, I don't know what you think, George, but everybody's saying that Glenn Close is the person to beat from the movie The Wife, which has not had broad distribution. One quick thing about the Golden Globes versus the Oscars. The Oscars have thousands of voters. I don't think Golden Globe probably has more than about 110 people
right.
voting. And so you kind of have to keep that in mind. And also the Golden Globe voting is done by people who write reviews for their home countries. They may live here, but they're all from different international destinations. So their reviews are written not just for distribution in North America, but also primarily back to their countries of origin. So a lot of times people want to use the Golden Globe votes as a barometer, but really they're not when it comes to the Oscars.
They say it's 50%, I think, is the number they came up with. But again, it goes back to where everybody picked somebody different, it seems like. I've not seen The Wife, but obviously Glenn Close has been garnering a lot of votes for that. Lady Gaga was fantastic in Star is Born, but you made your point about that movie having been done, so to speak, which brings me to Olivia Colman and The Favorite, which was... That was a twisted movie. It was really good, and she was outstanding.
She was fantastic. You look at her in real life, her publicity photos, and then you watch how they've made her up and costumed her and how she looks in the movie as the queen. It's an unbelievable transformation and just a sterling performance.
Who do you think wins? You picked Melissa McCarthy for the nomination. Do you think she wins it?
I think Glenn Close will win because she's been nominated, what, 7 times and never won an Oscar.
Ah, the Susan Lucci factor.
I think this is her year, yes. I think one of the reasons there's so much buzz for Glenn Close, and it's the truth, is she deserves an Oscar. I think she's been oversighted too many times. So maybe The Wife wasn't her biggest film. Maybe The Wife isn't the film that everybody's going to know her from. But I predict that it'll be the one that'll get her first Oscar.
Now, you are a Vice fan, and you're a fan of transformations, obviously, after what you said about The Favorite. Has there been any greater transformation by an actor than Christian Bale becoming Dick Cheney somehow?
Absolutely. He put on 60 pounds for this movie. And if you've ever seen him, you know, he's actually a thin guy who's in excellent condition. But he says publicly that he had a diet of malts and donuts. And he put on over 60 pounds. And I have never, that transformation is even a strong enough word. He is so much like Dick Cheney that if they'd made that film, George, and not billed who played Cheney, I don't know anybody would have guessed it's Christian Bale.
And I couldn't have figured it out.
Yeah, I think it's between him and Viggo Mortensen for The Green Book. And I think it'll be a close race between those two.
No Rami Malek in this one?
No, I enjoyed that movie too.
Rami Malek, I should be clear, played Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody for those who haven't seen that one yet. Just want to be clear on that. But, so you think he was good, but not great. What do you think?
Well, I think people will take it as a tribute performance. Do you know how they do these tribute shows at nightclubs and stuff and in Vegas to Elvis Presley and blah, blah, blah? I think too many people will say, oh, he did a wonderful job playing Freddie Mercury, but it's a tribute movie. And that I think, when you compare it to Mortensen or Christian Bale, people will say, well, yes, but it wasn't as good a pure acting job as some of the other nominees.
Meanwhile, Bradley Cooper shut out again. Everybody's talking about Bradley Cooper getting the cold shoulder this year.
Well, you know, I don't think he cares. I mean, I think if you listen to him, he's such an easygoing guy, and he's so credible and so talented. I think he feels, the voting, the first thing you got to know about the Oscars is they're hardly ever fair. And it's as much a popularity contest and a publicity contest. And who's got the most money to spend on what nomination? Those are the factors that make the winners. And sometimes all those factors go together with the best performance or the best picture. But most of the time, they don't. They come close. I mean, if you look at all the nominations, you're looking at the top talent for last year's films. But that doesn't mean that a lot of people say, well, that's not true. How could that be? Well, you know, for as small a film as Roma is, the word is it's got a humongous promotion budget, somewhere between the numbers of $25 to $35 million, which is probably 5 times more than what it costs to make. And you ask yourself, well, how could that be?
Well, Netflix.
Yeah. Yes. There you go.
They've got the Silicon Valley money to throw at it. That's a change of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you make a movie for $5 million, and then you spend $35 million promoting it. There you go.
I was going to say, if I give me $35 million, I can promote my own movie.
Now you could get a winner in the home movie category. And you know, this is the birth maybe of Netflix, who do excellent work. This is the birth of them as a major Hollywood power studio, so to speak.
Well, we'll be watching to see how it all plays out. Again, a good opportunity to get out and see some movies this weekend, particularly if you're not happy with the big game coming up on Sunday. Harry Hamm, thank you so much for joining us here on KMOX, taking all that time and fighting your way through that cough. We appreciate it, and we will be writing down your predictions and paying close attention when the Oscars come up next month.
Okay, George, it's been great being with you. Take care.
Thank you so much. Harry Hamm with us on KMOX. 9:56. That is about going to do it for me here in the KMOX studio. Thanks for being with us tonight. And we'll see you next time on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.